From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Israel dropped hundreds of bombs on Gaza over the past several days in the worst violence since the 2014 war. At least 25 people have been killed, including children and a pregnant woman. Four Israelis were also killed after Palestinian militants returned fire with rockets. Newly re-elected Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered the attacks and blamed Hamas, as has been his tradition. He and others have said that the violence was the result of two Israeli soldiers being shot on Friday. We go now to Bethlehem, where Mazen Kumsia joins us. He's been on the faculties of the University of Tennessee, Duke, and Yale, and he is now a professor at Bethlehem and Birzeit universities. His books include Popular Resistance in Palestine and Sharing the Land of Canaan. He's also founding director of the Palestine Institute of Biodiversity and Sustainability. Welcome, Mazen.
Thank you very much, Sonali, for having me on your show.
So first, what exactly, as far as you can tell, prompted this latest round of violence? We know that if we just read U.S. mainstream media accounts, we're not getting the full picture or even the correct picture.
No, it has been remarkable to watch some of the mainstream media and see how they have reported on this and made the victims, the Palestinian natives, look as if they are the aggressors. 2 million Palestinians, to put in perspective first, 2 million Palestinians are besieged, are under blockade in the Gaza Strip with no place to go and no place to hide from the Israeli bombing. And Israel uses the Gaza Strip like a turkey shoot every 2 or 3 years. They attack Gaza to test new weapons that they have. While people are literally dying from lack of medicines, half the stocks of medical supplies in Gaza are gone and are not available for treating things like simple illnesses like diarrhea, but also complicated illnesses like cancer. And so it is remarkable when you put it in that context, and some Palestinians try to demonstrate and are shot immediately on the border by high-powered rifles. And then Israel dares to claim that basically the Palestinians who retaliate against its bombing by shooting a few homemade missiles, those are the ones who are the aggressors. This is very strange that the Western media buys this story and publicizes it as such.
I understand among the victims are at least one baby and also a pregnant woman. There have been accounts saying that between 22 and 27 people were killed, but possibly that number may go up.
The number is actually now 29, including two pregnant women. So actually, if you add those babies to the number, it would be higher. And one of the pregnant women who was killed, she was pregnant in her seventh month, and she also got killed with that baby, and also with her 14-month-old toddler. And the toddler died first, and the woman died in the hospital later. Horrific scenes of devastation of residential buildings, at least one hospital, at least three schools, three ambulances that were targeted by Israel to prevent them from getting even to the scene to evacuate the wounded and injured civilians. This is the scenery that we can see. The images are available for anybody to see on social media. People share them. Documents are available. Human rights and organizations have all documented these crimes against humanity and so forth. And yet, as you mentioned in the beginning, it's remarkable that the mainstream Western media remains, in this la-la land of speaking about Israel defending itself against 2 million Palestinians that are besieged in the Gaza Strip.
Now, the rocket attacks were apparently aimed at, quote-unquote terrorist targets. We basically, of course, will hear the standard line, which is that Israel is simply killing those who are perpetrating violence on Israel. But as far as you can tell, who was targeted? I mean, they're kind of open about the fact that they're carrying out extrajudicial assassinations on individuals. It's just that they're claiming that those individuals deserved it.
No, I mean, Israel itself in its own media said that they targeted some Hamas operatives, and indeed they targeted Hamas operatives and they killed three of them. But that's 1/10 of the civilian population that was killed. As I mentioned, 29 civilians who were killed in these attacks by Israel using the most advanced U.S. supplied weapons of F-16s, missiles that are very high explosives. We're talking about 1,000 and 2,000 pound bombs that are dropped on residential buildings, at least three very large residential buildings. We're talking dozens of apartments have been flattened. And to say that this is targeting the terrorists, I mean, it's incredulous. If anybody wants to believe that, they can feel free to believe that when you target a residential building which has like 20 apartments, that this is targeting a terrorist. That's different than what when they targeted the car, for example, that was carrying a person that engaged in the resistance from Hamas or from Islamic Jihad. But to target buildings and those children who are killed, several children, two pregnant women, as I mentioned, certainly no rational human being would say that a pregnant woman with her 14-month-old baby, toddler, is a legitimate target of fighting terrorism. It's sick, in my humble opinion, the propaganda that's put around this. It's sick, but it's, in a way, I guess one could understand or expect it from colonial powers. I mean, even us in the United States at one time, we called Native Americans savages and terrorists, and that we are just defending ourselves against them. That is, normal par for the course in colonialism.
Now, the Trump administration has, of course, made it very clear whose side they are on in when it comes to Israeli attacks on Gaza. Not terribly different from what we've had in previous administrations, but do you feel that it's escalated, that under Trump we're seeing a much stronger support of Israeli impunity than, say, under Obama or G.W. Bush? And actually, even before I get your answer, I want to quote Trump's tweets on Sunday, where he said, "Israel faces a barrage of deadly rocket attacks by terrorist groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad. We support Israel 100% in its defense of its citizens." And then he added, "To the Gazan people, these terrorist acts against Israel will bring you nothing but more misery. End the violence and work toward peace. It can happen." Does Trump represent an escalation of U.S. support for Israel?
The Trump administration rhetoric is certainly unusual. I mean, most political establishment figures in the world are a little more guarded in the way they support Israel and try not to appear so blatantly hypocritical that here he's using the language of "to the Gaza people, your terrorist attack." I mean, he's saying 2 million people are terrorists. By the way, the 2 million people include more than 1 million children. So these children are all terrorists in the language of Donald Trump. This is unusual. This is kind of, the rhetoric is unusual. It is sad, and it's hard to come up with the adjectives to describe it. Sad, sick, perverted, whatever. But it is very, very direct, obviously, in taking colonial racist supporting attitude 100%. He even used the term 100%. We are with you. It's not like there's nuances about it. I think at some level, one can say this is perhaps okay that the U.S. is supporting regimes like Saudi Arabia and Israel as a terrorist, racist state, and the Saudi Arabian regime that just executed 37 people. This kind of exposes the mask that these governments in the West have had in the past about supporting human rights and international law when they obviously support racism, destruction of people. In Yemen, for example, a genocide with U.S. support that's happening, and Trump just basically even vetoed the UN, U.S. Senate resolution regarding this genocide of Yemen. So I think it's clear that this particular U.S. administration have dropped all the masks and made it so blatantly clear that we stand with racists. In the past, they used to try and hide it. Now they are open and they are clear about it. And I guess that's the only silver lining I could say, is that the excuses are no longer there. The language is very clear, and the people better wake up and stand up for human rights and justice.
Now, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu just won re-election in Israel, and he has promised hardline policies that are so extreme, really suggesting that the rightward tilt in Israel is becoming semi-permanent. Does the timing of this several days of attacks on Gaza, you feel, have anything to do with Netanyahu's re-election?
Yes, indeed. And one has to put it in the larger geopolitical context. People like Netanyahu and Donald Trump and Modi of India and other right-wing tin-pot dictators around the world, like the ones that just took power in Brazil, and are trying to control the world for the benefit of the rich and powerful military-industrial complex and so on. And they're trying to topple any resistance to them from countries like Syria, Iran, Yemen, Venezuela most recently. So they want to topple these countries, these governments that oppose this hegemony of a military-industrial, very extreme right-wing fascist systems around the world. And I think one has to put it in this context, that there's a choice now for humanity. We either let these guys control the world and take us down with it, basically, because that's what will happen. I mean, the latest UN report on species extinction says that 1 million species will go extinct soon, and the destruction of the environment is accelerating. And people like Netanyahu and Donald Trump, who work every day in and day out to fight any kind of environmental justice or environmental work or human justice or human rights, I think they represent basically the enemies of humanity and the enemies of nature. And it is time for us common people to say enough is enough of this, and we need to rise up. And that's what the people of France, for example, are doing with the Yellow Vests movement and in other places around the world. And we need to join these movements.
Oh, I appreciate you putting what's happened in Israel and Palestine into a larger context. Is, just staying on this latest round of violence, is the tentative ceasefire that we've heard about, which I understand is an informal ceasefire, is it holding so far? As far as you know, on Monday, has there been any more bomb dropping by Israel?
Well, I mean, it's kind of sad on this first day of Ramadan that, I get it basically a Facebook post from a colleague in Gaza who says, did Ramadan start? I can't tell because we can't see the moon because of the smoke that's rising. So the violence by Israel continues, and the Israeli system, Netanyahu held a meeting just this today, just Monday, I mean, and talked about how he would basically work to escalate and to teach the people of Gaza a lesson they won't forget. In other words, more collective punishments and more destruction of the people of Gaza and the infrastructure of Gaza. And making one Israeli minister said, we're returning Gaza to the Middle Ages, if not earlier. So I think, you know, I put my hand on my heart and I worry about what's going to happen in the next few days, because obviously this is a fascist government who got the green light, not just the green light, but lots of green money from the U.S. and weapons to perpetrate these massacres.
Mazen, here in the United States, there has, of course, been a raging debate about the issues. There's always been a debate about the issues among ordinary Americans, but there is now a greater debate in Congress than we've had before because of folks like Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib in our Congress, newly elected members of Congress. Recently, there was a piece of legislation sponsored by Representative Betty McCollum saying that military aid to countries like Israel cannot be used to do things like imprison children, which of course Israel routinely does to Palestinian children. Do you feel that that there is movement in the positive direction on the issue of Israel's crimes against Palestinian people, a clearer-eyed vision of that in U.S. discourse?
Yes, indeed. And I'm very pleased to say that these candles in the darkness are increasing. And even though they try to put them out, you know, and try to slander people like Congresswoman Ilhan and others by calling them anti-Semites and so on, these slanders seem to be actually backfiring. And more people are realizing what is going on. I mean, if you think about it, what is how do people know when they are being oppressed? What is a characteristic of the oppressor and looking at who oppresses us? People we cannot criticize are people who control us. And in this case, the Zionist lobby in Washington is off limits to criticism. And so it proves that they are in control of foreign policy in a way that doesn't allow even criticism of this lobby or even mentioning that there's a lobby. And this goes both on the Democratic Party and on the Republican Party. And I think it's important for us to understand this and to work towards justice, regardless of who is in charge and who tries to control us.
Now, the situation with the U.S. support of Israel is something that even among Democrats, of course, unfortunately, we don't get enough, enough movement because Israel receives such not just moral unconditional support, but all of that military aid, right, which is then translated into violence aimed at Palestinians. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how that key basis of the U.S. relationship with Israel based on military aid can and should be challenged. You know, when Trump says it's all up to the Gazans if they want peace, he doesn't mention, of course, that the U.S. tilts the scales so heavily in favor of Israel, right?
I mean, it's not like we have two sides to a conflict here. What we have is a colonizing power called Israel that sits on top of Palestine that has caused 7.5 million Palestinians to be refugees or displaced people. Two-thirds of the Gaza population is refugee population. We have a colonization, anti-colonization struggle, if you want, but we certainly do not have an Israeli-Palestinian quote-unquote conflict. So, of course, he took the side of the colonizers. That's expected, and we move on beyond that. We need to think what our role is as human beings, whether we are US citizens or Israeli citizens or Palestinians or whoever. Our role is to resist, and there are many Israeli citizens, many Americans, many Palestinians who are resisting this system. And this resistance will continue until the oppression ends. And colonial, anti-colonial struggles can end only in one of three possible scenarios, either the Algerian scenario, or the Australian and US scenario, which is genocide, or with the coexistence with equality in one country, like happened in most Central America and South America and Southeast Asia, and most recently, South Africa, which ended apartheid. These are the outcomes, and we will work for that third outcome. People of various backgrounds who will work for that third outcome. That's how we can challenge this system of oppression that is funded and supported by the US. And we say here, of course, imperialism and colonialism, Zionism, all are connected, of course, and are connected to each other organically. And we must fight them organically also as common people connected together of various backgrounds, Jews, Muslims, Christians, Baha'i, anybody who thinks of human rights must work against imperialism, against colonialism, against Zionism.
Mazen, finally, I'm wondering if you can give us a sense of how successful the BDS movement has been in holding Israel accountable, the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement. There has been news of Israel attempting to hold this Eurovision concert that it has come under fire from. And of course, the part of BDS is the cultural boycott of Israel because of Israel's actions against Palestinians, Israeli apartheid, tried and tested method in previous apartheid regimes like South Africa. And I understand that Eurovision ticket sales are low, potentially because of BDS, but also potentially because Israel is engaging in violence on Gaza. When there's violence in a region, it's hard to have it both ways, right? Be a perpetrator of violence and be a cultural mecca.
Indeed. In fact, it's kind of ironic that Netanyahu today in the cabinet meeting with the leaders of the military, when he promised more massacres in Gaza and so forth, he said, we will not lower these attacks for the sake of the Eurovision. This is his words. In other words, we don't care. You can boycott us, not boycott us, do whatever you want, but we are going to continue with our massacres. I think the answer to that from rational human beings and anybody who likes Eurovision and others is to escalate the call for Eurovision to pull out of this silly notion of coming to a country that's engaged in racism and apartheid and to go spend your money somewhere else. And so we escalate the call for BDS. And in the same way that they escalate the genocide of the people of Gaza, So we want to escalate the attempt to stop them via the nonviolent ways that include things like boycott, divestment, sanctions. And we urge all your viewers to really engage with us on this level.
I want to thank you so much, Mazen, for joining us today. We'll certainly keep our eye on what's happening in Gaza in the coming days. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My guest has been Mazen Qumsia, speaking to us from Bethlehem, where we've been talking about the situation in Gaza with a relentless Israeli bombing that continued for days and what was considered the worst violence since the 2014 Israeli war on Gaza. Mazen Qumsia has been on the faculties of the University of Tennessee, Duke, and Yale universities. He's now a professor at Bethlehem and Birzeit universities, and his books include Popular Resistance in Palestine and Sharing the Land of Canaan. He is founding director of the Palestine Institute of Biodiversity and Sustainability. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.